Today's episode of the Inside EVs podcast is brought to you by E-Range EV Tyre. E-Range EV tyres are specifically engineered for electric vehicles. Using an advanced manufacturing process called liquid phase mixing, E-Range EV's EcoPoint 3 technology creates a tyre with lower rolling resistance and longer range, while offering low levels of wear and high grip. All this while staying affordable. Go to erangetyres.com. That's E-R-A-N-G-E tyres.com to find your EV's next set of tyres.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside EVs podcast for January the 6th, 2023. This is episode number 144. Thanks for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about the reveal of the Ram 1500 Revolution BEV concept, the Volkswagen ID.7 appearing at CES, and the new brand unveiled by Sony Honda Mobility called Afila and its first prototype. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the peerless Mr. Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EV's and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the masterful Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of AutoSpec Studios, where he produces high voltage videos for a great number of YouTube channels. If you're watching this on YouTube, you'll notice that Kyle is not actually here at the moment, yeah, but he will be joining us. Okay. He'll be here. I have faith. I have confidence in Kyle. He will be here. All right. So let's kick this thing off with what we've been driving this week and then get to the news. So let's see. There's a lot of stuff is going on at CES this week. That's the old Consumer Electronics Show. Now it's the International CES Show. And there's a lot of, it's increasingly, you know, the last few years have been more and more cars showing up there, you know, all the time. So it's increasingly becoming like a mobility show, really, and with lots of massive TV screens and other electronic gadgets. But so this past week, Tom, just after last week's show or something, you popped up a little thing in our team chat. It's just showing off this like new vehicle that you ordered. Like, you have a lot of vehicles already, and you have some more on order, but you ordered another one.
Well, I'm no Kyle. I don't own a lot of vehicles. I do have two. Right. They happen to be two really cool, really expensive vehicles, but I do have two vehicles right now, and I figured, you know, what the heck? Let's order a third electric pickup truck, because I think this one looks really cool and has the potential for me to have some fun with it. So I have no idea when I might get it. But I put in one of the pre-orders for the Canoe pickup truck. So I had a chance to play with the Canoe van about 3 months ago in Texas when I went out to the Wallbox. When Wallbox opened up their new manufacturing facility, they had one on site there, and I got to sit in it and play around with it. It's as cool as it looks in pictures. Okay. So, I said, let me put $100 on this, and it is a refundable deposit, and we'll see where I'm at once I get called and they say, hey, you know, it's time for you to configure your vehicle. So I have no idea. I don't even think Canoe has any idea of when the time frame is for these things being released. They're saying this year, but
our list.
Yeah, with new, with these new startups, you just never know how it's going to go. But I thought it'd be cool to play with, so I threw $100 on it.
So have you got to sell one of your vehicles to make room for this one, or will it be a third one?
You're thinking way too far in the future for me. I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to do. You know, I've been saying on the podcast for a long time, which all the followers remind me of, I said I'm going to get both trucks and then sell one when I decide which one I like better. And, I'm not even close to wanting to sell either of them yet. So I don't know what lies. You know, I think that's going to be what forces me to sell one of them when I have another vehicle that I've, say, pre-ordered like this, or I did pre-order a Rivian R1S also. So when I get the call for either one of these for them to say, hey, it's time for you to configure the trucks being built, that's when I have to decide which one I'm going to buy. But I'm definitely going to drive both of these through the winter, have some fun in them in the snow, and then make my decision. I can't decide right now. It's a good problem to have. I get up in the morning and I walk out into the driveway and I got a Lightning and an R1T, very, enviable position to be in. And I get to decide which one to hop in and drive every day. And I just take turns because they're both so cool.
Right on. So
look at this week. That's cool too.
Yeah.
We're looking at pictures right now for those on the audio of the canoe pickup truck.
Yeah, it's that's got the square steering wheel and the super high-tech interior. I mean, it looks great, but they are a bit of a blind spot for me in terms of a manufacturer, in that when it arrives, I'll be like, oh, cool, it's here, let's get serious about it. And that might be a little unfair to Canoe, because there's been so many in the past that have come along and said, hey, we're going to do great things, and then amounted to nothing really and disappeared off into they did some stuff and never arrived. So, but you've seen this up, you know, as you say, you made your order after seeing one. So it's not as if it's vaporware.
Yeah. And it's just so unusual. I could honestly see myself selling both the trucks I have now and this being my daily driver. Like, because I just love unusual, weird things. It's what got me involved with EVs to begin with in the first place. Like in 2008, do you want to drive an electric Mini Cooper? You know, and
that's right.
You know,
good point.
It just fits into what I like to do. And I could definitely see this being my daily driver.
All right. So this week, I don't know if, So this week you also had a video on your channel, State of Charge, where you looked at the question of whether electric vehicles would crash the grid. And you talked with Eric Cahill from the Sacramento Municipality Utility District. So did he put your fears at ease?
And I also spoke with John Markowitz from New York Power Authority. I did, this video was many months in the making because, you know, for so long we've heard so many people talking about how, you know, we could never transition to EVs. We're going to crash the grid. And then California comes out last year and says they're going to ban the sale of new combustion vehicles in 2023. And then like a month later, the California ISO sends out a warning asking people to not charge their electric car if they don't have to during peak hours. And that was overblown by the media. The media picked that and ran with it and said, okay, last month, California says they're banning gas cars. This month, they're telling you you're not allowed to charge your EV. And that just wasn't the case at all. California ISO is an entity that oversees the bulk electric, power system. They oversee many municipalities, and they're in charge of bulk power. And all they asked for was during these peak energy times when there was, you know, it was very hot, everyone had air conditioning on, they said during 5 and 9, if there's things you can not do, like say charge your electric car, because you can charge your electric car at night, you have to have your refrigerator running all day, you know, you can't shut that off, but you can shift the load on some things. There are some things you don't have to do at certain times, and EV charging is one of them. And EV charging also happens to take a lot of power. So it's the perfect thing to say, hey, I'll set the delayed charging and I'll make it turn on at 10 o'clock at night instead of 6 o'clock when I get home from work. But of course, you know, the pundits ran with that and said, you know, last month they're telling us we can't drive gas cars. This month they're telling us you're not allowed to charge your EV. You know, like it just shows the dysfunctionality of California, which, you know, that's what pundits do. They take little bits of truth and they, you know, make it out to be something that it's not. So I said, you know, let me see if I can talk to some of the people that are actually tasked with providing power. Some of the people that work in some big utilities in the country that work in that are in areas where there's a lot of people concentrated. You know, I mean, I could have spoke to somebody in rural West Virginia. There might have been different answers, but I wanted to get people that worked where there were millions of people concentrated in small areas where the power demand is ridiculous. So I got somebody from California that Dom said, Eric Cahill, who works for the Sacramento Municipal Utility District, and John Markowitz, New York Power Authority, about a half hour interviews, both of them, and just kept asking them questions like, by the way, New York has also pledged, I don't think they've signed it yet, but they've pledged to also ban new electric vehicle, gas vehicle sales in 2020, 2035, just like California. So now here's two huge states with tons of people saying, you know, you've got 12 more years and that's it. No more new ICE vehicles. So I asked them both, you know, hey, can you do this? If millions of people plug in, you know, if we phase out gas cars in 10, 12 years, are you going to be able to handle this? Because you must be preparing for it now. You're not going to just wait till 2030 and say, okay, now we need to build six more power plants. And I got good answers from both of them. They explained that neither one seemed stressed at all about it. Now, they were just kind of like, yeah, we could do this. You know, this is what utilities do. We provide power. This is what we've always been doing. And, you know, for back in the 50s and 60s, when central air conditioning was introduced in homes, everyone said, you'll never be able to do this. And we did it. And then other things came in the 60s and 70s. And, you know, I remember I lived in Jersey City growing up. We had a 30 amp main in our whole freaking house. Like, that was the power for the house. And now, you know, 150 amps wasn't enough for me here. I had to put 400 amp, service in my house. So the utilities, this is what they do. As long as they know that this is coming, that's when they both told me, this is the problem, is when something happens and we don't know it's coming. We all know EVs are coming. We all know we're transitioning the fleet in America to electric. It might take 15 years, it might take 25 years, but we know it's coming. And as long as we know it's coming, we plan for it and we scale. And we know what to do and we know how it's going to work. That's basically the overriding message of it, that they both said, we got this.
Right on. And somebody said that was one of your best videos ever, Tom.
I think it was informative. To be honest with you, if I'm going to be totally honest, I was hoping to get more like specific details out of both of them. Like, okay, this is how we'll do it. But again, these guys, I mean, these utilities have, you know, thousands of employees.
Right.
They don't do everything. You know, they're not the engineers that are designing the systems. These guys are, we're both involved with providing power, but also electric vehicle infrastructure. That's why I went after these two guys, and specifically that they're tasked with providing power for electric vehicle infrastructure, DC fast chargers and so forth.
Right. Cool.
Everyone that I've spoken to over here as well, UK side, says that with the exception of upgrading some local and regional facilities to strengthen the grid where it needs to, it's not going to be an issue. Particularly if we can smart charge. Jan in the comments just mentioned, look, let the grid be able to control chargers. There's some electric tariffs over here as well. I'm with an electrical provider as well that I'm not on that tariff, but it is an EV tariff with Octopus. And they are coming to the US. They're in Texas already, I think. And they offer to take control of your EV charger. In return, you get a very good electricity rate, and you just say how much you want your car charged by in the morning, and they will make sure that it's done, and they'll work out when to charge it. And a lot of people can't get their head around offloading that decision to the electric company.
Right.
There's obviously a boost, there's an override, and you can turn that facility off, but I'm not on that because you need to have either a Tesla or a VW car, or anyway, it doesn't work with the MG or the Kona or the charger that I've got. But these schemes are around, and the more that becomes clever about when we charge, it's just not an issue. But I helped in a very small way. I helped Tom make a little bit of this video, so I got to watch this in a preview form, and both guys absolutely fascinating. So please go and watch this when you finish listening or watching to this podcast.
Yeah, thanks, I need to Martin. Finish watching it.
Thanks, Martin. And what Martin just mentioned is really the first phase of how electric vehicle charging will be more integrated with the grid, as far as your utility, you giving your utility the power to throttle back your charging based on certain parameters that you set. And in return, you get a greatly reduced rate. I think that's the carrot there, that, yeah. You know, if I could tell you, look, right now you're spending $3,000 a year on gasoline. If you buy an EV, you're going to cut it down to $1,000. But if you'll give your utility the power to decide when the vehicle charges based on parameters you've given them, you've told them, look, by the morning, I need 60% charge to go to work, whatever. And then also you get a text message you can override any time that they are about to throttle down your charging. If you agree to that, your annual charging is going to be $400. So now you went from 3,000 to 1,000, and now we're giving you a 60% reduction because we can decide when your vehicle charges. Now you're looking at $3,000 a year versus $400 a year. And I think people are hesitant, particularly Americans, Martin. You know, we don't want to give the power to anybody. You know, like no, I will decide when my car charges. But I think people will gradually open up to that. But that's the first step. The second step on top of that, and I don't know how many years out this is, but both of the gentlemen that I spoke to told me that both utilities are currently working on it. The next step is not only can they decide, to throttle back your car charging, they can actually pull energy from your battery to help the grid during crisis times. Oh, right, and Electric vehicles will actually prevent brownouts. Now, I know every time I talk about this, I get tons of people in the comments saying, no way, that's not happening. No one's going to take energy out of my battery. And it's just one of those things that, 20 years ago, no way will I drive an EV. And now half the people that said that are saying, maybe I'll get an EV. So that's the next step. And what everybody I talk to that work in the utilities that really understand this stuff have told me that EVs are, and I know I sound like a broken record, I've said this many, many times, EVs are going to be a solution to grid stability because we have all of this distributed energy storage systems, which are cars now, not Tesla Powerwalls, millions of them all over the place, that at some point, if they are plugged in, the grid can pull for them and prevent power outages. And I know it's out there. We're years from being able to get to that, but it does work. And we've had pilot programs to prove it works. So, that's the thing about EVs crashing the grid. The funniest part about it is they're going to do the total opposite. They're going to make sure the grid doesn't crash.
Right. Right. Yeah. This future looks pretty good that way. I think, vehicle to grid is going to really help the whole, stabilization and strengthening of it. So Kyle, you're in Las Vegas this week. You're at CES where all the action is. And we're going to talk a lot about the cars that are there. But before we get that, before you headed down there, you attempted a bitter cold Nissan Leaf charging experiment this week. I don't know if you want to talk about this or not, but I have it lined up.
Yeah, this was kind of a dumb video that we posted. I don't know.
A couple of dumb videos.
A couple of videos. Yeah, I mean, they were all cold weather. We filmed them all in one night. And right, because we just had that couple days of cold snap, and maybe two nights we filmed it. And yeah, just deep froze two Nissan Leafs. I had I thought it would be kind of an interesting video. It turned out to be a fail. I had the smallest battery ever offered in the Leaf and the largest battery ever offered in the Leaf. And right. What I wanted to see was, okay, what does 10 years of engineering do for cold weather charging? Actually quite a bit, because the old one didn't even turn on. Right. But that was actually a fault of a weak 12 volt battery, which we've since saved and the car is okay. Yeah. And the new Leaf had such different charging behavior in the cold than our Tesla Model 3. You see, with Tesla, right, when it gets really cold, you plug it into a supercharger and it takes no power to the battery pack, pretty much. It runs the heaters before it starts putting energy into the battery, which helps with longevity. The thing is, even if you charge certain chemistries of lithium battery packs when they're this cold, they'll actually crystallize and you'll never recover that degradation. So it's really, needed for all these cells to be much warmer than where it was now. What's interesting, though, is the blue Leaf, the new one, just took 3 kilowatts from the start. And that's what was going into the battery pack and ramped up to 5. Okay. So after about an hour, we only put 5 kilowatt hours into it. But it would, that's really not, great. Then, in comparison to the Tesla, that basically took no energy, put everything into the heater, and then as soon as it got to a certain temperature, it just dumped the power in. And we got so much more energy, even in a one-hour period, even without charging for the first 45 minutes, than the Leaf got. So that was the interesting thing. The real fail was our old Leaf bricked during this video, which we've since saved. But,
it was approaching, but was it minus 18 or something Fahrenheit?
About, and it even got colder after that.
12 volts really struggle. Lead acid batteries really struggle in that kind of cold. And if it's a little bit weak, like the one that he had was, it's no bueno.
And you can see me fighting with the Chatamo
cord. Right, the cord. Here. That was crazy.
It was the most, all my force went into trying to turn this thing. They get so cold out there. It's wild. And
you need mittens too, by the way.
No, I know.
You probably know that.
Well, got some for Christmas now, so I'm good. I got nice warm gloves.
I watched making this video and like I realized how cold it was. And I'm like, look, I cannot do that. I cannot go out in that kind of cold without that thing on my hands. God.
Kyle, right, watching you struggle with that reminded me I have a review coming out this weekend of a new charger, the Topdun Pulse Q. It was officially the worst cold weather cable I have ever tested. And
nice.
I had to fight it. And this is a level 2 cable. And yeah. I had to use all my strength to get it just straightened out. And so if anybody's interested in watching me struggle with a cold weather cable, that video is coming up this weekend.
What's it called? The Top Gun? Top Gun.
Topdun. It's a company out of China. And the name of the charger is the Pulse Q. And the interesting thing is, I just got another charger sent to me. I didn't even ask for it. It just showed up. It's called the Maxi Charger, I think. I have it over there. And it's the exact same unit, except in a different color, like a different company. So I guess it's like a white label that a company's making over in China. And everything's the same. It's just a different. And it's funny. I opened the boxes up together and everything, the packaging, the wrap, it's exactly the same. They just paint the box different. So we're going to get a lot of this now, particularly out of China. Now that EVs are really taking off, and I always recommend people if you're not looking at my reviews, look at other reviews, but don't just buy the cheapest charger you can on Amazon because some of these are junk. Make sure you know what you're buying. Don't save $50 and then get something that's not safety certified, that the cable's a frozen garden hose when it gets below 30 degrees and the connector breaks when you drop it. So just do your research. And if you buy a good one, it's going to last you, really long time.
Yeah. Hey, it's Kyle. So last week, you also talked about, you talked to us about Rate Your Charge. And then I saw you did another spec podcast episode about it with Alyssa. So has that concept evolved somewhat over the past week, or is there any sort of update that you want to give us?
Yeah, Rate Your Charge is really turned into something pretty interesting, actually. Started it as a Twitter page just to see are people interested in sharing their charging sessions on a different platform. Everyone's used PlugShare for a long time. PlugShare is owned by a charge point operator. We've seen them altering scores recently to make the stations look more reliable than they actually are. And, it was really born out of frustration from our side that like, hey, if a station has 1 out of 10 chargers working in PlugShare score eyes, that's a 10 out of 10 because in theory you could achieve a charge. And I'm like, well, that makes no sense. So we got to do something with Rate Your Charge here. And right now it's actually a bit convoluted. It's hilarious. We're getting so many check-ins that like we're retweeting most of them, some of them, and almost 4,000 followers in just a week. Tons of high quality, rich, really nice video data from experts out across the country giving us real-time info. So we're getting the best data out there from EV drivers, better than the charge point operators have about their own stations. And now what the heck do we do with the data? So that's been the big topic. I've been focused here on CES filming, but a lot of people here, obviously CES tech people, they all drive electric cars. We're meeting so many people who watch our podcast here, who watch our videos on YouTube, and so many of them are aware of Rate Your Charge. So I'm like, okay, this might be a thing.
Yeah.
And now we just need to figure out what the heck to do with it. Do we turn it into an app? Do we make it a web portal? I don't know.
I was like, yes.
Make an app.
Yeah.
Hire an app developer.
Yeah.
Turn it to an app, Kyle, and run with it.
You could do that in a month.
We'll see.
I think. I don't know.
I could, easily, that would be not just the US. That could easily be an international thing as well, where people give real life updates on where these charge. I would do it all the time if I had it as an app, or if I had it as a, I've not got involved with the Twitter because it would just confuse things like, where's a guy in England doing it? Yeah. But
yes.
I'd happily contribute to it as well and make it an international thing because not to dump on the existing apps that are out there, but just explain what was happening with the scores, because yourself and Brandon as well, you, I think, rightly say if you go to initiate a charge, a station of 10, as you've just mentioned, and one doesn't work, you were logging that as a fail, even if eventually you got one to work. What was happening in the background with the people who run the apps to say, actually, we're going to kind of bring all those scores together, going to delete the ones that Kyle's put on. What was happening there?
Yeah, so one of the things we noticed was like, okay, if you roll up to a site that's completely offline, the score has some elasticity to it, and quite a bit. It has a lot of history in there. So in my eyes, it doesn't matter what the heck was going on at that station an hour ago, yesterday, a week ago. I want to know, you know, a number or some indication that if I drive there now, am I able to achieve a charge? And that's what PlugShare has always argued and said, you know, our score is a, you know, sort of an idea as to, are you able to achieve a charge when you go to the station? And, you know, we were seeing stations that were completely down or severely crippled showing 7, 8, 9 out of 10. And I'm like, well, how can an 8 out of 10 be completely offline? I mean, it's zero. You can't charge. And so what we were doing was we're like, okay, I think people can have a bit more influence over this. You know, we know for sure charge point operators, you know, all of the big ones, Electrify America, EVgo, Green Lots, Now Shell Recharge, Blink, they all monitor PlugShare for, you know, drop in station performance. They don't necessarily have a monitor to read all of the comments, but they know, hey, if my station went from a 10 to a 2, something's going on and we need to look into it. And even their techs appreciate this too, because we've had a few Electrify America technicians comment in and say, like, we really need to know when a station's bad by the plug score. So we decided to plug in at each attempt and log each attempt as a check-in, which actually makes a lot of sense to me, because it doesn't matter if it's 30 people trying or you try 30 different stations, that's 30 attempts to plug in. So log each of those. So we basically say, okay, you get to one, doesn't work. Log that as doesn't work. Get to another one, doesn't work. Boom, doesn't work. Get to a good working one, boom, log that as working. And the idea here is really to paint a better picture and a score to fix chargers. And what PlugShare happened to be doing was consolidating all of these and saying, oh, you actually charged, so actually that was successful and the station's good. And we really saw them side, unfortunately, with network operators rather than drivers in this case. And no surprise, they're run by a network operator. So, you know, in my eyes, we really need a driver-centric app that is all about drivers fighting for more reliable charging, more ubiquitous charging. And unfortunately, that the only way to do it maybe is just to do it ourselves. I'm not totally sure.
Yeah. And unfortunately, I wish you didn't. Like, the best situation is if you didn't have to do this, but we're not in that situation. We're in a place, not just where you are, but here as well, where reliability is a real issue. And, you know, for years we talked about, let's get chargers in the ground, and also said, let's keep them running as well. But so much more attention should have been paid to what's the ongoing service contracts and what's the uptime, and our governments and, you know, the legislatures getting involved with making sure that it's seen as an essential service, like electricity and running water, etc., that this is. And indeed, over here, petrol stations are regulated. You know, it should be treated like that. So we should have paid much more attention before now. And unfortunately, I wish you didn't have to do this, but I think you do have to do this.
Yeah, I think there's an interesting aspect in the data that we can gather. We're going to issue reports to network operators to say, here are the sites we found today that require immediate attention. We'll, of course, make that publicly available. Because we're getting so many check-ins, we'll be able to see how many days it takes them to actually fix their stations, get them online. We'll be able to see, did their app say the station was online or offline, especially with NEVI funding coming, you know, 97% required uptime. You know, it's going to be interesting. We'll see who's lying that their chargers are on and who's telling the truth and who's put in the technology to do this accurately. So there's a lot of different areas we can get into. Ultimately, you know, hopefully this doesn't have to be a thing in 3 or 4 years and we can just go back to making videos.
People in the comments are saying it can easily be abused, but all user generated content can be abused
pretty much
if you wanted to. You know, Amazon has a fake review problem. They've recognized it, and they strip out tons of fake reviews all the time. And so all user generated content can be abused if you want to. And sure, if you want to be the person that drives around in a petrol car giving a 1 rating to every charging station, then if that's all you got to do with your life, then you crack on and do it. But if enough people do it properly, that's when UGC works really well. So I mean, it's a scale thing.
And there's a way to vet, you know, verified users that we might know, or train people to review certain things for maybe deeper level reviews. And but I will say the charge network operators have already taken note just on a Twitter page. We have ChargePoint interacting every day. We have EVgo monitoring, sharing, actually retweeting a lot of the posts, interacting and learning about their stations from there. Tesla official follows us, which is great. We've already found four issues with superchargers that they have learned about, or maybe knew about, but also saw the real-time video data from us and have expedited fixing things. So we know we're making a difference already. We know Electrify America is watching, of course. They don't necessarily interact so much, but we certainly know that they're seeing the status of their stations out there. So hopefully everyone is benefiting from Rate Your Charge so far. But it is a bit convoluted right now. No question. I mean, so many check-ins. I've muted the Twitter feed on my personal page. Like, it's just too much. And so we need to find a better way to control the data. And that'll be a project after CES, basically.
Sweet. Well, we'll have to ask you about that again in the weeks to come, I think. Yeah, it sounds like a great project. I'm looking forward to seeing. I need to go over to Twitter, actually, and look at some of these. I haven't been over there, but kind of get up to speed.
Mark Richards asked, isn't this what PlugShare was supposed to be? So Mark, PlugShare has evolved over the years.
Yeah.
When PlugShare first started back, God, I remember it was 2008, 2009 when I was first driving, it was just that, sharing plugs, because there were very few public charging stations. What it was people that owned electric vehicles would share their home charger. So right. I was listed with my address. And somebody could, if they were in the area and they needed to charge, they would call me and say, hey, I'm in northern New Jersey. I need to charge somewhere. Can I come to your house and charge? And then, you know, you'd either say yes or no. And I had people come to my house and charge back, you know, in like 2009, 2010. Yeah. But then as public infrastructure started, you know, becoming more robust, it shifted more to people reviewing public chargers. And then the owner, this was back probably 13 or 14, somewhere on there, decided it was becoming too much of a hassle. I don't think he was making money on it. And it went for sale. And I thought about buying it. I really looked into it at the time. And I would have had to drop everything else I was doing and just focus on this. And so I didn't. He wanted a lot for what it was at the time,
right.
Which probably is cheap if you look at it now. But that's always the case, that, you know, when you're looking at something, it looks expensive, and 5 years later you say, geez, that would have been the best deal I ever made, particularly right. with real estate. But in any event, then EVgo bought it. So EVgo runs PlugShare now.
Oh, I did not actually know that. I knew it was started in part by the guy who started Hamcycles, or became Mission Motorcycles, and he was involved in starting PlugShare as well. But yeah, that's interesting. So EVgo owns PlugShare, and
It, you know, to answer your question, Mark, no, it wasn't started to rate charging stations. It's kind of evolved into that,
right.
But its initial mission was to find charging stations for people that were trying to get around with electric vehicles, but there wasn't any infrastructure, and it's evolved ever since.
All right. Hey, so let's dig into some news real quick here. But first, there were some people asking about for a Bolt update earlier in the chat. No, trust me, they were, really.
Multiple people want to know if you've bought your car yet.
So I have not. Oh, man. My God. I mean, I'm close. So Bolt update. Credit union loan is approved. I'm ready to go. I just need to find one that is actually on a lot without a $5,000 market adjustment or a $2,000 dealer package for nitrogen in my tires and flashing brake light. I found a dealer south of me a ways that has a special channel for Bolts. They get first dibs on stuff coming into the region, and I'm on speed dial with them. So as soon as something comes up, they're going to
just call everywhere in the country, because they got charging and you got EA and you can go on a road trip, right?
Listen, for anyone watching this, if you can find Dom the Bolt that he eventually buys,
metallic, please.
I will personally send you a $50 Amazon gift voucher. I will personally do it, because
I'll chip in too. Make it $100.
Okay, right. $100.
You guys.
All right, $150. We're in for, you know what? Just make it $200. We'll split it three ways. Find Dom a Bolt.
I'll put it in this, I guess.
If you've got half an hour spare tonight on the internet and you just, you know, if your partner is watching some trashy TV program, just search around the US, find Dom his ice blue bowl. If it's the one he eventually purchases, you got yourself a nice voucher coming your way. Dear God, we want you to buy this car.
So the problem is that, like, you know, they put out listings out there, but they're not actually on the lot. They're like in transit, or they're not allowed to sell it for some reason, or there's all kinds of things going on where you try to buy something that's, you know, on cars.com or cargurus.com, and it's not actually, or on their website. You go to the dealership website and they have cars, and you call we can't sell you that for whatever.
Can you imagine the dealer that eventually sells you this car? Can you imagine the publicity they're going to get from this podcast alone? Like, if you know a dealer, like, just connect them with Dom. They're going to do so well out of this deal.
Kyle, when he does get his bolt, you and I have to go to the dealership and record, like, the handover ceremony of him getting his keys and everything.
Yes. Oh, we'll do Dom's bolt delivery. We'll make a reviews video about it. And maybe we should play some tricks on him or something. We'll, like, lock the handbrake on and leave it at 1% state of charge so he can't actually go anywhere.
Yeah, so I guess the details. I need an ice blue. What is it? Ice blue metallic, or actually, I think they're changing the name to Tide metallic. And under like LT1, pretty much base, like with no extra add up. And they did raise the price this week. Actually, I have that $900 more now. So the price did go up. You guys were right. The price did go up, not a huge amount though. So. I can deal with $900. That's three extra payments or something.
I mean, it came down $6,000 last year, so it's a steal.
It's still a good deal. All right, so there's tons of things happening in the electric vehicle world this week at CES. With that in full swing, we have lots of coverage on Inside EVs and Motor One. And if you subscribe to some of the Out of Spec channels, you'll get to see a lot of things that are not necessarily headline news, like on our sites, like fast charging equipment and vehicles like the Desert Beaver from smaller companies. So Kyle's got this great video of him and Alyssa walking around. I don't know how you got in there before there people are setting up the booths, because they kicked me out when I did that.
Oh yeah, no, you just walk with speed.
Right, like you're supposed to be there. Right,
that's the thing, John. You probably were like looking around, like. Making eye contact with security.
Right.
You just walk like you own the place.
That's kind of what I was doing.
You'll be fine. We've done this
every year at CES. Somehow they haven't kicked us out yet, because we are not allowed in there during this. I say in the video we have special permission. We had no permission to be in there at all. We were just filming everyone setting up.
But it's great. I mean, I thought it was, you know, really interesting to watch. So I mean, I enjoyed it, you know, because just bouncing from booth to booth, and there's not crowds of people in your way. Well, just people sitting up the things. There's forklifts and stuff going on. Anyway, I just enjoyed that.
I once snuck into the LA Auto Show before we were supposed to be in. And the Mercedes CEO was rehearsing his speech, you know, when they do the press announcements. And I was just standing there watching. There was like six people there, and somebody came over to me and they're like, "Do you belong here? Like, you're not supposed to be here. We're doing a private, you know, recording." And I'm like, "Oh yeah, I'm working over with, Volvo. And I just was walking by. I thought it was interesting." And I just kept going. But anyway, that's my sneak in early story. And also, the one with ChargePoint that we talked about here previously, where I took the picture of the ChargePoint home charger with the Tesla connector before the show opened, and then Tesla called ChargePoint and said, "Take that thing off the floor immediately." So,
anyway. All right. So we only have a limited time, so we have to just talk about the main kind of bigger EV debuts. So I guess we'll start with the biggest, and I think that's the Ram Revolution concept that has finally been revealed, and we now have an idea. Physically, it's bigger. so we now have an idea of the approach that the Stellantis brand will take to compete with the Ford F-150 Lightning, the Silverado and Sierra EVs from GM, and the Tesla Cybertruck. And I guess the canoe, I guess. So there's not a whole lot in the way of performance figures out there yet, but we do know it will have an 800-volt architecture that will allow for peak charging power of 350 kilowatts. It will also have dual motors, four-wheel steering with up to 15 degrees of articulation on the rear wheels. And it's also got like a ton of little tricks involved here. So I'm going to rattle off a couple real quick. It's got an extendable bed and a mid-gate that opens up the bed in the cabin, like the Silverado EV. It's also got fold-down jump seats in a third row. There's a pass-through to the frunk a la Bollinger, if you remember that. So you could carry like 18-foot-long lumber if you needed to or what have you. 18-foot-long fishing rods? I don't know. The steering wheel is collapsible, which I don't understand that either, but it has a follow mode, so you can ghost ride the whip if that's what you're into. It has something called a ram charger that is a little robot that senses if your truck is near in the garage and needs a charge, and then it will position itself under it and then charge it inductively. And then I understand that Ram is going to unveil like the production version of this in just a couple months. So I suspect that that's what we're seeing here is pretty close to what we'll see then. It'll have regular mirrors. Doors will open like normally, you know, back to front. And I think the roof won't be that one piece of glass so much. It'll probably be, you know, segmented in at least a couple segments. That's a crazy glass roof on this concept. It's pretty neat. So, Tom, Ram is the last American truck maker to show off some sort of pickup. Does the 1500 Revolution concept give you any confidence that Ram can come up with a compelling product here? And what do you like most about it? And what do you like least about it?
Well, yeah, I think that they can come up with a compelling product, and sometimes you benefit from being last. Sometimes, you know,
right.
Ford benefited from being first, but they also, put out a truck that maybe wasn't pushing the limits and doing as many different things as, say, the Silverado is going to do, and now the Ram Revolution. I think it's going to be called the Ram Rev, right?
Right. I think it says Rev on the back.
I don't think it should be called the Revolution. That's the concept name.
Right.
And it's, you know, Don, it's hard to say what I like. I'm not going to take a specific thing. What I'm going to say is I like the fact that they are they're pushing the limits and they're doing creative things with the vehicle. They're not coming out and just like what Ford did and just making an electric Ram, like everything the same. They've said, okay, what can we improve upon? What can we make, you know, futuristic. I love the rear wheel steering. It's one of the things that I so wish the Lightning had. I tell you, when I had the Hummer here for a week, I loved turning that thing around in my driveway. I have a big landing by my garage, and it was so easy. But both the Lightning and the Rivian struggle. I have to make 4-point K turns just to turn around. And the Hummer, it was so easy. It was just two movements and I was out. So that's great that that's going to have that. I think the styling looks really cool. I wonder how cool the production version is going to be, because obviously they're going to have to change some, quite a bit on this
to
get it to production. And we've all seen awesome looking, concepts turn into hideous looking vehicles with only small tweaks from the original concept. You don't need to change a lot to make something ugly. And I'm not saying that's going to be the case. I'm just saying I want to see what it looks like. You know, like that they're going 800 volt. There's a lot to like about this. And I think it's going to be a welcome addition, it should be better. You know, the Silverado should be better than the Lightning because it's coming a year later. The Ram should even be better than the Silverado because it's coming a year after that. We need to have the new introductions introduce new ideas, new features, and give people a reason to continue to be excited about this segment.
We're looking at pictures of the interior right now, and I just want to say that I kind of like what's going on with the interior. There's no screen right in front of the driver. You see that? They have two screens that are stacked. I think they're two 14-inch screens stacked here in the center. But it kind of looks like the Hummer EV, like center stacked a little bit with that screen and the buttons underneath. But Kyle, did you have some things that what do you think about this? Have you seen it in person?
Just in passing. I'm supposed to film with it actually today, but I think I'm not going to.
Really?
Bit concept-y. I hate concepts.
Sure. But I mean,
just show us the damn truck. They're so late to the game. Right. You know, F-150 Lightning is already on sale. I'm seeing them driving around the roads. It's doing real work. You know, Silverado rolling off the line right now, pre-production units ready to rock and roll. And here we are like, okay, late to the party. Lordstown's already here. How could Lordstown be rammed to an electric truck? Just crazy.
That is a good point. That is a very good point.
In my eyes, I'm just like, you know what? I'm not sure this deserves all the hype at this point. I want to wait for the production version. I want to wait until the specs are confirmed, and then maybe I'll film it at that point.
It's got a decent sized front. It's kind of weird dividers in there, but I imagine they come out. I'd like to hear more about that. There's a lot of, they didn't tell us a whole lot about the details of it. I guess we're going to, but it's also, like we said, only like 2 months before they show the production version, which is a really short period of time. So there's still lots to learn about this thing. It's using the big STLA platform for vehicle on body or body on frame kind of vehicles that they'll be using. I'll probably make vans and SUVs with as well. Martin, anything strike you about this? You're muted.
Oh man, that sounds embarrassing.
It's all right.
I like it. I think it's traditional truck styling, but updated for EV era. If they can come in a couple of months' time and put some more flesh on the bones, and it looks anything like this, not just the CGI that we've got, be really, really happy, because this is going to add more to the mix. An interesting thing that with the just the importance of trucks as well, just to constantly remind myself, like I was looking at the Silverado sales figures this week. I think they published the 2022 numbers, and it was 500 and something thousand. Does that sound right?
Yep.
And it's
that's just Silverado too. There's a Sierra. Just a
reminder.
On top of that.
Just a reminder to myself, like how big a deal trucks are for you guys. And so, anytime we start to electrify stuff like this, really excited about it.
Yeah. They're 1, 2, 3 in sales every year in the US, Martin.
Pick wow. Wow. So, so important.
Yeah.
Right. So, I don't know if you want to say anything more about the Revolution, maybe wait till it comes out and we'll talk about it. But overall, I saw like a one shot of it like a few days ago, but it was under embargo. I couldn't talk about it, and it was just taken at the wrong angle, and I was like, this does not look good. But it's really growing on me. I think it could be, and I liked all the little nifty little tricks. So I'm kind of curious to see what they're going to show us in a couple months. So Volkswagen is also at CES this year, and it's showing off its ID7. So this is the first electric sedan from the brand. And like its other electric products, it sits on the MEB platform. So this wasn't exactly a full reveal. That will only happen sometime in the second quarter of this year. So it's still covered in a camouflage, which is a multi-layer of electroluminescence paintwork. The ID7 was previewed by the ID Aero concept that we revealed last June. One of the highlights of this car is its range. So it's because it's got a lower aerodynamic profile, it can get a lot more range of the battery. So it's likely got the large 82 kilowatt hour pack, 77 kilowatt hour usable. So VW says it should be good for 435 WLTP miles, 700 kilometers. So it could get, you know, close to 400 miles in the real world. Kyle, I know you got to see this up in person, and you have a couple of videos, including one of the short reveal ceremony. So what were your impressions?
It's the same formula we would all expect for a Volkswagen electric sedan. Love that it's a hatchback. Seems to be the right size. The one I'm actually most excited for is this will have either a shooting brake or maybe even a full wagon component to it later on. That's going to be the spicy meatball that we're all looking for. I didn't get to play around with the inside at all, but based off of my Volkswagen software experiences, I really hope that they got it right with this new generation. I have actually some meetings with Cariad tomorrow to discuss what the heck they're doing to the Volkswagen brand.
And Cariad, just to remind our audience, Cariad is a software company that works with Volkswagen, or that is Volkswagen. Yeah,
they are Volkswagen.
That's right.
They basically stuffed all the software engineers from each brand in one building. Right. And then we got a lot of software bugs as the result. So, got to see what's going on with those guys. And Yeah, I mean, overall, I mean, is there much to complain about here? It's built on MEB, which is proven to be a very nice platform to drive. Looks great. Nice big 15-inch touchscreen, backlit controls now. They put the air vent controls in the screen, which some people will love, some people will hate. I don't know. And nothing pushing the limits here. I think not 400 miles in the EPA cycle or real world. I think, you know, we'll see maybe, you know, if we're lucky, it'll be just over 300 miles in the EPA cycle is my guess, but still great range. And it should charge really well because that new version of that 82 kilowatt hour gross battery pack that's in ID Buzz charges like a monster. No, you get peak speed of around 190 kilowatts, but it just rockets all the way to the end. It's really great.
Nice. I like the big screen. The 15-inch screen, I think, is an improvement because that's... lets down the ID3, ID4, I think, with the smaller screens. And so, and also the driver's display looks more integrated, less kind of plonked on top, but a little bit more kind of just nicely worked into the dash there. I think the inside looks really nice. And then we've got to wait for the next generation to get the steering wheel back. So it was too late. This steering wheel comes with the horrible slidey buttons. They're going, the normal steering wheel returns, but not with this one.
Okay,
I agree with Kyle as far as the version of this to really wait for is the station wagon. I was at the 2019, I think it was, LA Auto Show when Volkswagen introduced the ID Space Vision, they called it. And that was like, I think it's what this vehicle is basically, you know, the station wagon version of it. And it looked really cool. I mean, it was a pure concept. We weren't even allowed to sit in it. But it just looked really cool. It had great aero. I think it was like a 0.23, you know, drag coefficient. Of course, you could say whatever you want with concepts. But I thought that was really, I was hoping that was going to make it to market sooner. I mean, that was 3 years ago. But hopefully that's what the station wagon version of the ID7 turned into, because I thought it looked awesome.
Well, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're showing some pictures of a ID7 with a little bit of camouflage. It's got some fake looking exhaust pipes on the back and like a little fake grill in the front. But you can kind of get a good idea, maybe even better than looking at the camouflage version of it at CES, of what's going on there. But still, like you said, the actual full reveal only happens in the second quarter?
Yeah,
of this year. Yeah. Yep. So. Yep. Let's move along to something else. All right. So Sony surprised the world a couple of years back by showing off a pair of concept vehicles. It then created a joint venture with Honda called Sony Honda Mobility to make vehicles based on those original concepts. Now, Sony Honda Mobility has just launched a brand and have brought its first prototype to CES. The brand is called Afeela, and the prototype appears to be an evolution of the Vision S concept car. So talking about the name a bit, CEO Yasuhide Mizuno said the word feel is at the heart of the mobility experience they want to build, where the car both makes you feel something and also senses what you feel. I don't know. Afeela is teaming up with Qualcomm and Epic Games to help power the entertainment technology that the company's vehicles will feature. Movies and video games were quite prominent in the presentation. So the design of the car is super clean, and I'm going to come out and say that I like it in pictures. I haven't seen it in person, but in pictures, I like it. And I've heard lots of uncomplimentary things about both the design and the name, which is fine. Everyone has opinions. There's still a good bit of time before the first Afeela leaves the showroom, however. Pre-orders will only start in the first half of 2025, with the first cars arriving in the spring of 2026. I want to ask Kyle if he's seen this prototype in person, but first, Martin, what do you think about this name first, Jared? I wanted to, because you're not in North America, so I wanted to get your impressions of it.
What do I think of the name?
Yeah.
It's a pretty terrible name, isn't it, for a brand?
I don't know. I want to get your opinion. Is it? Yeah.
If we're talking about what car my wife and I are going to buy next, and she says, "Hey, what would you like?" And I'd say, "I don't know. I'd like Afeela." And she goes, "That's nice for you, but what car do you want next?" Like, it's not your birthday. Come on. Like, Afeela? That just sounds like something you get in trouble for.
Afeela.
You know, like, Afeela? Come on. What have you got? Afeela? Nah, thank you. So I will give that one a miss. But that's not even the name of the car. It's the name of the brand. But right. The car is now to 2026, and Sony and Honda have been prevaricating on this for so long. Of course, they didn't tell us anything apart from 45 cameras and sensors and things, and they said, oh, it'll have a very powerful computer. I'm sure it will in 3 years' time. Of course, it's Sony. You'd think it probably would. The next thing we'll know is they'll tell us, oh, you're going to be able to play games inside it from your PlayStation. No, really, Sony, you surprise me. So there's nothing they told us about this car apart from showing off what it looks like, and people in the comments are already saying, actually, the Vision, what was it, Vision S01 or something, or the Vision 01S was a far better looking car. So I'm going to go and have a look at that now and bring it up on screen. But sure. Yeah, like, I mean, it's what the thing about CES becoming a car show, which is fine, obviously, is that it's the tech side of cars that they use it for, and a lot of the tech announcements are just announcements. And there's nothing here about the stuff that we all get excited about with EVs. So it's okay. Terrible name.
Right. Well, I feel a song coming on, but before we turn this into some like weird musical, Kyle, did you see this thing?
Who have
person?
A song? A feeler. I can't feel.
I'll write them a little jingle.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I've never really done commercial work before, commercial like songwriting before. I'll do that. I can't imagine, wrap my head around getting paid for music, but anyway, so Kyle, yeah, did you see this thing or what?
It's the Vision.
No, I've been just, if I see it, I'm going hard right. I'm just avoiding it. I don't want to go near it. That is like, it looks like the plague on wheels. It's like someone described a Lucid over the telephone and then produced this. And it's just not, I don't know. And it's not even worth talking about because we're years away from even seeing the beginnings of this. And like, I just, look, I'm sure technically it's going to be awesome, right? But like, it's just not even worth wasting a brain cell on right now.
Okay. I mean, there you go. So Tom, thumbs up, thumbs down.
Probably thumbs down. You know, the Vision S concept was so much nicer than this, in my opinion. This looks like a, you know, Lucid Air crossed with a Lightyear one.
It's got some Lightyear in it because it looks like it's not holistically designed. Yeah.
Lucid up front, like Lightyear in the back. It looks soulless to me. Okay. It just looks like, you know, it's a like an appliance. But right, let's see when.
Okay, I don't mind being the odd man out. Let's move on then. So BMW are also at CES this year, and they brought the iVision D, which is another concept vehicle. This one sets the stage, the stylistic stage, for the new class vehicles that are coming in 2025. That's only 2 years away. The first of which will go into production in 2025 in the form of a 3-series-sized electric sedan. So D, that's D-E-E, stands for Digital Emotional Experience. And one of the things that you notice about the interior, so we're looking at the exterior on the outside here, but the interior is kind of at least as interesting as the exterior because there are no screens in there. All the driving info is going to be apparently on a heads-up display that extends across the full length of the windshield. And I understand that you're supposed to be able to see this from any seat in the car. So people in the back seat, the passenger seat, generally now when you have the display on the windshield, only the driver can usually see what's going on there. So they have some interesting technology coming up with that. So this is to help keep drivers from having to look down at a screen and take their eyes off the road. So they say it's for safety. I think it's an interesting approach considering everybody else keeps making bigger and bigger screens. So Tom, there's not a whole lot of meat here, I feel, but does BMW look like it's going in the right direction with this?
Isn't that a Datsun from the 70s on the side?
Right. Right. B210 or something. Right.
Yeah. You know, I do like, I'm not like Kyle, I'm not huge on these concepts, but
sure.
I got to give BMW credit. They do really good concepts. You know, in my opinion, they have the best, like wildest concepts out there. You know, it's fun to see the direction they're going in, some of the things that they're talking about, but you know, we're not going to see anything like this. You know, it's the technology. Hopefully it's a testing bed for future tech, but it's not reason to spend too much time on this. It's cool. The things that they're showing, you saw the headlights kind of like blink, like real eyes and everything.
Oh, really? I didn't
see
that.
Yeah. I mean, it has some really cool tech in there, and it's good to see that they're doing cutting edge stuff like this, but we're not going to see anything like this.
Right. This is not even based on an actual car that's coming. Right. But I just did think it was interesting that, and I don't know if the BMW is right about this, about screens going away or and just using the front. Like, what if you're charging and you want like a theater experience? I know, I mean, that's something that some companies are you know, selling or, you know, thinking about.
Yeah, BMW is selling it. They offer the BMW theater screen.
Right, it folds down from the rear seat.
Yeah, and the new i7, and then they're like, "Oh, no one wants screens," but they're putting all the screens in this car.
Right, thank you. Okay, that's what I'm talking about. Like, I was a little confused when I started. We have on Motor One this morning. There's an article about somebody, the CEO, I think, of BMW, talking about, you know, fewer screens or something.
XPeng has it too on the P5.
Okay, so let's talk about something that's not a concept vehicle. Let's talk about. Yes, some issues with the IRA. That's the Inflation Reduction Act.
Oh, can we talk more CES before we do this?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I have a full video of the Volvo EX90 just went up at the start of this podcast.
Oh, sweet.
So that's here. They have two of them at the Google booth. It's, you know, the most in-depth tour you'll find on this car yet. I'm going to go film the Polestar 3 here today as well. Oh, sweet. Fisker Oceans are here. Going to drive one, hopefully. VinFasts are here. I'm going to drive and film the first one. That they may not let me in the car because they know I'm going to be pretty critical of it. I already have some things that I'm just like, whoa, this is not great. So we'll see. Maybe it'll drive awesome. We'll have to take a look. So many electric cars, so many chargers. Just want to mention very briefly, Autel coming in with a full new DC fast charger line. Reviewed an EV box charger yesterday. Actually was hugely disappointed with the specs. You can tell they were just going for NEVI funding grab. They call it a 240 kilowatt charger, but that's only if you're at like 800-900 volts. On a 400 volt car, it's 120 kilowatt charger. Just was not impressed at all. 300 amp output and not the move, in my opinion, unless the price is really cheap. We'll have to see, but they wouldn't reveal that. Tons of stuff. Free Wire's here with a brand new design, which looks awesome for their chargers. And it's just pretty insane here at CES. I mean, I was supposed to leave last night, and now I think I'm going to spend an extra 3 days filming because I'm going to film Lyric. I've never seen one before, so this is the first Lyric I've seen. There's so much to get into. I mean, it's just overwhelming. So anyone interested in CES stuff, just come if you can find a way to get a pass. And it's truly the best EV show of the year.
And if you can't make it to Las Vegas, you can watch Kyle's videos.
I don't think we're even going to be able to get full length videos in on everything we want to. So we're going to our best. We've been, you know, the show's only open for a short period of time, but we are there from the first second until the last, just nonstop recording everything. We'll have, you know, way too much content. We'll probably not even post half of it, but I just wanted to say, played around with the EX90 and in love with that thing. It rocks. Okay. Did a whole interview with head of design, and it's just a cool vehicle. Seems like pretty good specs, and looking forward to the Polestar 3 today.
Right. Yeah. I'm kind of curious the difference between the Polestar EX90 and the Volvo EX90 and the Polestar 3 exactly, because they're going to be made side by side basically in North Carolina. Right.
South Carolina. And they both should qualify for some or all of the tax credit, actually, because you can get nice ones for under 80 grand.
Yeah, we'll talk about that tax credit thing right now, I guess. Right. So that's cool. Yeah. So there's a lot going on at CES, and I'm looking forward. This is going to be a great weekend watching.
Did you hear about the Mercedes charging network situation?
Yeah.
Yes, I have that in my notes. Yeah.
We're already talking CES, so let's just bring it up.
Sure.
Huge news, Mercedes going to build out a DC fast charging network with, Dominic, you probably have all the specs, but why don't you hit us with the specs and then we can discuss.
Okay, well, they're partnering with MN8 Energy. They're going to put €1 billion into it, so like $1.05 billion. It's going to be installed over the next 7 years, 400 hubs with 2,500 chargers by 2027, 4 to 12 chargers per hub, but some may have as many as 30 chargers. At the display, at least, they're using charge point equipment. It's going to start in U.S. and Canada, and later it should expand to Europe and China.
350 kilowatts.
Yes,
DC fast chargers.
Yep.
For the fastest ones. And I don't know about whether they were specific about Europe, but the CTO said that there will be solar canopies, food services, and lots of security and cameras to make people feel safe if they're charging on their own late at night. So they've thought this through, that it's not just a press release. It's actually, here we're going to do some really interesting things. And anti-Tesla supercharging network, open it to everyone, but how can we make it special? They're going to obviously make it special for Mercedes-Benz drivers. What are your guys' thoughts on reservations? Because they talked about, if you're a Mercedes-Benz driver, you can reserve a space at one of these. Like, how big does that reservation window need to be? Charger reservation isn't a thing, so are they going to be the first ones?
It's a thing in the US.
Is it?
We have it with EVgo.
Does it work? Do people respect it? How does it work?
I don't think it really matters right now, because there's not, like, every station's full at the moment for most of them.
Right. Okay.
And you can't reserve on all the networks.
Okay. So
you can't reserve any station. There's just some stations require allow it, and ChargePoint's one of them. They're actually the first one to come out with charging station reservations. They've had it for probably 10 years now, where you can reserve.
Way.
Yeah, when I installed my ChargePoint chargers on my property, freaking 2012, 2013, I could have set up and allowed reservations at that point. So, and it makes
sense.
How long
do you block it for? So if I'm driving to a charge and I reserve it, how long does that preclude anybody else from using it?
It only holds for a certain, you can only do it a certain time in advance, and it only holds for a certain period of time. And then the charger frees up if you don't come and plug in.
Because if you think, I'm going to do a quick splash and dash, a 12 or an 18-minute charge, if you've got a car that will get to 80% in 18, 20 minutes on an 800-volt system, and the reservation thing is 20 minutes, say, and I'm heading to a charger, then that's a whole charge that somebody can't, somebody could have pulled in, finished, and gone in that reservation window. So I'm really not sure about charger reservations. But if Mercedes-Benz are going to put a load of money into this and they want some benefits and kickbacks for Merc drivers, then that can be one. Probably discount pricing can be another, and some other incentives to help owners of those brand vehicles feel good about it. But that's just fantastic that they're going to allow anyone to use these chargers. They're nice and quick as well. They mentioned that in Europe, they're going to be up to 30 chargers at a location, but up to is a big disclaimer, isn't it? So
we want a minimum.
Yeah. We want the smallest one we'll build is 12. Like, that's right. What we want to hear. Yeah.
But at least in the US, they're going to be using ChargePoint Express Plus, which is their new hardware. I have a whole review of it on Out of Spec Reviews. Gives the full 500 amps. The thing is, Mercedes EVs are really low voltage, especially the EQE with the smallest pack. So they need 500 amps to get anywhere near their peak speeds. And so they're going to be making sure that when you plug into Mercedes, you're going to get all the power you need. And I'm actually going to go talk to some people on the inside of this project who've been working on it today. Perhaps it'll be interesting enough for a video, or we'll do a podcast with them. But talking to people both on the ChargePoint side for the U.S. and on the manufacturer side with Mercedes-Benz, some German folks over there. So should be interesting. The big thing for me, of course, and not to always harp on this, but the EQS came with 2 years of free charging on Electrify America. Why didn't they just put money into EA to expand that network, right? They already have a network wide of stations all around. Why do they have to go and build all their own stations? And honestly, just based off of the feedback I've heard from some of their engineers who go out testing, and of course, customer feedback, I think maybe they're taking the matter into their own hands. They've always had a partnership with ChargePoint as well from the beginning. But again, automaker partnerships are really important. And this is the first time we've seen a German company go big with a different CPO than EA.
And brand is the differentiator going forward. So I'm not saying anyone can build an EV. Clearly, not anyone can build an EV. But in 100 years of brand building in combustion land, electric vehicles are going to shake everything up. It gives new entrants and new companies, as we've seen, a chance to get a market share. The Chinese companies can come in as well. Startups can do well. And so actually, all of that 100 years of development of making combustion stuff, if you're a Mercedes-Benz or a BMW or a Volkswagen, etc., your world is being turned upside down. With a brand like Merc, no one's going to say, very few people this podcast is a little bit of an island, an oasis. But very few people will be like, oh, what motors are you running inside your Mercedes-Benz electric vehicle? Oh, I got my internals from Valeo, you know. So very, you know, very few people are, whereas in combustion land, people go, you know, kind of crazy over the technology inside it and will say, oh, I'm a BMW guy, or I'm a Mercedes girl. And so actually brand is the differentiator. And if you can then own the charging experience, and if your brand can be, as to seen with Tesla, the best looking, the most reliable, you arrive with your Mercedes, you plug in, it connects instantly and just charges. That's brand. And that's going to be in 10 years time, the only reason that you would buy that car, not that car, not that car, because under the skin, there's not going to be a huge amount different.
And another thing to point out about their network, they're not trying to build like a coast to coast network. From what I understand, a lot of the stations are going to be concentrated in areas like urban areas and places where there's a lot of people, rather than open up corridors. Like you won't be able to drive coast to coast on the Mercedes network. And also to temper enthusiasm, I mean, this is great news, and it's good. More and more charging stations to be installed. That they talked about $1 billion investment, I think, in North America by 2027, and they're talking about 400 sites with 2,500 individual chargers by the end of 2027. So that's 4 years from now. They'll have about half of what Electrify America has installed today.
Right.
So this isn't an Electrify America competitor. It is complementary. You know, yes. And which is great. Which is what we need more and more of these, and it's great to see manufacturers put this out, but I just want to make sure that we're not equating this with that they're trying to build out a nationwide network of chargers. I don't think that's their
plan. Don't we wish they do? We do, right?
I'm not saying we don't wish it, Kyle.
If they could bring like the, you know, the kind of reliability that they have with the cars to a charging network, that would be something I think we could all get behind.
Well, I mean, that's up to the CPE 250s working in mass scale. Right now, I'm 50% uptime on these units. 50% they work great, and 50% I wasn't able to charge. Yeah. I have to try them more. There's only one installed in Colorado. There's two installed in Maine, one at their headquarters in California, and I'm pretty sure that's all that's out there.
And so that's these what units, you're gonna
use? Yeah.
And who's monitoring these? Who's repairing them?
Right.
Who's in charge of service and uptime? Do we even know? That's come out? I didn't read it.
I'm doing it today.
There's Mercedes, a charge point, and then they have, what's the name of the other company?
M&8.
That's a spinoff of, who was it? A big finance company.
Really?
Geez.
Like BlackRock or something?
Yeah. I forget who it was. I can't believe I can't remember. Anyway, they like, I think, sell wholesale renewable energy. And it was a spinoff of one of the leading financial institutions, like a group of people that work at BlackRock or one of these companies decided they're going to go into this renewable energy field. So they started this company. And now, so we, you know, the ChargePoint is the only, partner that has any experience with electric vehicle charging, managing equipment. Yeah, Goldman Sachs. It was a group of people inside Goldman Sachs that spun off and started this MN8. So we don't have any idea of who's really, what's the entity managing it, who's gonna take care of the uptime. And as you know, the devil's always in the details. It's great that we're having all these charging stations, but if half of them don't work, it's just pouring the federal funds down the drain, because I'm sure they're going to they've got their hand out for some of these federal funds, you know, to build this network out.
But isn't that the point of car makers doing it themselves, is that it's they've got skin in the game then? Because if EA doesn't work, then apart from a few people that know it's VW, no one really comes to any harm. Just EA gets a bad reputation. Whereas if it's a Mercedes charger, like a Tesla charger that's not working, that's the brand. And that's all you've got left in EV world.
It's a risk. Uh-huh.
If you turn up and it's Mercedes name above the door and it's not working, I think they'll get fixed quicker.
I agree that would be, you know, an incentive. But I think a lot of people know EA is Volkswagen. So,
do they? Okay.
Well, it depends. I guess you're right. Yeah. Probably a lot of people don't. You know, I do talk to people at the charging stations, and I have had people say to me if they had problems with their ID4 or what a lot of people complain to me about with their ID4 is that it doesn't have plug-in charge. And they're like, I can't believe this. Volkswagen owns this network and it, right. And I don't have plug-in charge. So I'm like, okay, they know, you know, they, so, you know, I think more people might understand what's going on than what we always think or realize.
I also just wanted, that's an interesting comment. Half the troubles at charging stations, maybe more, are people just trying to activate the chargers. And it's like not a very hard process to get the app up and to swipe, but this is the majority of it. So I really think they should just send everyone RFID cards. And I know it would annoy some people, but just something that you don't have to open your phone, because especially with older drivers or people that are not so tech focused, which are a lot of people buying electric cars because the older generation's the one who can afford them. You know, they really are having trouble with this whole activation. And it's just a disaster that Volkswagen doesn't support plug and charge here on their own network, when at least in Europe, they do with Ionity on software 3.1. But even that didn't work great for me. And it's just like, okay, crazy.
Yeah. So let's move along to talk about the IRA a little bit. So this week they've released, I don't really have this written up properly, so excuse me if I fumble my words a little bit here, but there's been a few issues that's cropped up with the IRA. That's Inflation Reduction Act. And so there's some incentives, federal incentives, some rebates, tax rebates that have come into play. They've taken over from the previous federal tax rebates that George Bush, I think, put into law, or I guess it was signed into law by Obama, but it was brought up by Bush. Anyway, some vehicles are eligible for $7,500 and some aren't. It depends. There's a price cap for SUVs and sedans, $55,000 and $80,000. So there's a couple different issues here that's come up. First of all, and it's just basically of what is an SUV and what gets this, you know, this rebate, this incentive. And one of the vehicles that came up this week that gets the full incentive is the Ford Escape plug-in hybrid, the FEV. Crossover, it's eligible for the full credit since it's classified as an SUV, but it's smaller and less efficient than like the Ford Mustang Mach-E and the Tesla Model Y, which some of those aren't classified as SUVs. So this document online, it's bizarre. Okay, so I don't know how this even works, and it's on our screen here now if you're watching this on YouTube. But so we're looking at Teslas. And you can see that the applicable MSRP limit here, so a lot of them, Model 3s, okay, sedans, $55,000 is your limit to make it eligible for the $7,500 tax credit. But then you get up into the all-wheel drive, the Model Ys, and the all-wheel drive Model Y with the 7 seats, 3 rows, is $80,000. So that gets the big price ceiling. So, you know, those will all be eligible for the full amount. But then you get down a little bit, the all-wheel drive 5-seat variant of the Model Y is not an SUV anymore for some reason. It's the same car.
So like, the government say those extra seats, which are unusable in the Model Y, by the way, right. let's face it, they are unusable.
They're for children.
That is the difference. That's the difference between getting the $7,500 or not. What? Mm-hmm. That's insane. This whole thing.
I think it's 6,000 GVWR, which is the same that you get for where you can section 179 a vehicle for accelerated depreciation. I think those same rules or whatever that weight classification is. And there must be a suspension change on the 3-row version of the Model Y to tip it over 6,000 pounds GVWR. That is max payload plus vehicle weight. So the heaviest that vehicle could weigh under all circumstances. And that's interesting. Also, rear-wheel drive ID4 does not qualify. All-wheel right. drive ID4 qualifies. And it just seems ridiculous. But this is no surprise to anyone, is it?
Right. This is where
it's a little outrageous. I think, like, Cadillac Lyric is not an SUV. Like, come on. I mean, I like I'm having a hard time not swearing.
E-tron. Was the e-tron even listed? Because it only listed the Q5. I didn't see an iX on there or an i4.
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff that's not even on this list yet for whatever reason. I mean, some of those are going to be over the limit for sure, right? Yeah. So maybe they're not.
You can get an e-tron for under 80 grand easy. You can get an i4 for, well, maybe 55 might be a bit pushing it. But yeah, I mean, right. It's just absolutely insane. The fact that
I understand the Tesla fans' frustration of it. I've had so many comments this week from people saying, you know, why aren't you addressing this on your podcast this week, Martin? And I need to do probably a whole show on it. And it's specifically just for the, you know, my US listeners, because this is where I get their frustration that Elon Musk is the only person that's allowed to comment on Tesla, the only executive that has a public profile. They haven't got a PR department, so he is the company, and he is obsessed with Twitter. And so I don't care. He can do what he wants. I'm not a shareholder, and I know people get very upset with him for not spending as much time on Tesla. He's tweeted he hasn't missed a Tesla meeting because of Twitter. Whatever. But I do get the feeling that if Twitter wasn't around, all that I've seen Elon Musk do is reply to comments from like hardcore sort of YouTubers or Twitter people, you know, the hardcore Tesla fans. Like that's his bubble, and he's replied to their tweets to be like, yeah, this is crazy, man. But yeah, it is crazy. So what Tesla needs is a CEO that engages in the process, or at least has something constructive to say. He used to write blog posts, you know, the secret plan, all that kind of stuff. Like, he seems so obsessed with Twitter, and I'm sure he's running Tesla as well. But like, this is where there is an absolute vacuum. Tesla is the market in the US.
Yes.
And it suits some of the other car makers just to shut up and get on with this, because they're not making their cars with, you know, the battery stuff, the mineral quota. That's all been pushed back now and kicked down the road. And so they're just like, hey, this is fine. Like, our buyers get the money. It really impacts Tesla buyers, and he's just been so quiet on this. It's a real kind of dereliction of duty there from Elon Musk to engage in this process and say they're just like, there's fan movements, there's change petitions online that are very popular, but it's a real mess, particularly for Tesla.
And the interesting thing to me about this is, you know, everybody seems to be up in arms that, oh, look, the these plug-in hybrids qualify, the Jeep plug-in hybrid, the Ford Escape plug-in hybrid. But meanwhile, Teslas don't qualify for it. That's how it was before. You know, if we didn't change the rules, those, you know, the Jeep would qualify for the federal tax credit right now. Tesla wouldn't. The Ford vehicles wouldn't, because they hit their limit. So the Mustang Mach-E wouldn't qualify. They just changed the rules around a little bit. They didn't necessarily improve them. Some things are
some things are better.
I like that the used cars are qualify now. That's a big thing. But I'm surprised that people are surprised that our government didn't just nail this and get everything right and everything is fair. And yeah, we got a new tax credit. Of course, it's going to be horse crap. You know, that's what we get. You know, and I hate to be so cynical, but.
Right.
You know,
it's
a flawed tax credit. The previous one was flawed. It's just different people benefit different, you know, at different points in this tax credit.
Right. I mean, a lot of people think government does everything poorly. I mean, there's a lot good here, but public private companies do everything like perfectly. Private companies obviously mess things up all the time, and so does government. And this is messed up, but at least with private companies, we can, I don't know, call them out on Twitter or something. We can call it. It doesn't, the government doesn't care if we call them out on this on whatever media platform. But it would just be nice to get in touch with somebody, just see what's going on. So earlier, someone left a good comment, looking for the name here, who actually works in the industry and knows a little bit about this. Abe Vias, I believe is how it's pronounced, said this is highlighted in the NHTSA documents 49 CFR 52523.5. So I'm going to take a look at that in a little bit to kind of see what's going on. So yeah, someone also says quit complaining. Yep, sure. It's just,
well, we'll just see. This is a simple fix for Tesla. They're either just going to offer only 7-seat Model Y in the US and just reduce the price. Oh, right. Why would they offer 5-seat? or they'll just put whatever suspensions on the 7-seat on the 5-seat version, which should give it back that GVWR that's needed. Now, I've not read NHTSA 49 CFR 523.5. Normally, that's my kind of thing. That's my kind of reading. So I will read that. But I trust Abe here. Maybe it's more than just the 6,000 pounds GVWR that I'm thinking that qualifies for Section 179. Either way, obviously, Model Y qualifies a certain version, and I imagine Tesla will adapt the car to fit that version. I bet they're working on it right now.
Right, and not just Tesla. Like we said, other companies are having this same issue. Like,
but Volkswagen. Other companies don't move as fast as Tesla.
True.
Tesla can get in there and make a change and make it fast. Volkswagen requires years to implement
meetings.
These things.
A lot of meetings.
Yeah, that's true.
And, we'll see.
Tesla reduced their prices today in China. Okay. Australia, Japan, and South Korea. The China prices of the Model 3 and the Model Y went down between 10 and 13.5%. Add that to the October discounts, and the Model 3 is 24% cheaper in China than it was 3 months ago. So, again, demand, et cetera, you know, have that argument amongst yourselves. But Tesla can do this really quickly. You know, it's one chain of command, up and down. Let's reduce the prices. Let's stimulate demand. Let's get the federal tax credit, you know, in place. I've not seen any changes. I checked the UK configurator earlier, design studio, exactly the same for Tesla, but we'll see. I mean, I have heard that European prices may come down as well, but you know.
Right. Well, I mean, I expect them to. They raise them, like in North America at least, they raise their prices like way too much. I don't know if they hopefully they didn't need to raise them that high to make a profit. But because they're going to have to come down to be competitive, I think. Yeah.
So,
I mean, they had their – so there were a lot of end-of-year production sales results that came out this weekend. Of course, Tesla had another record year. I don't have the numbers pulled up in front of me right now, but they were a little bit short, actually, this year. Usually they're not too much, if at all. Sometimes they're a little bit over. But they were like 15 grand short, and it's just – I mean, they have a lot going on already with their share price, and they just nailed it pretty badly. And Rivian also had the same issue, but their stock price has just been sliding over the last few months. It's like ridiculously low right now. But they also missed their whole year. I think they had a 25,000 unit target, which was a reduced target from earlier in the year, and they didn't quite make that. So, yeah, there's some struggles out there in the real world. So anything else we wanted to complain about the IRA? We should stop complaining about it, but maybe the lobby groups, automobile lobby groups, will can address this. I don't know. We'll have to see. Something to look into, I think, anyway. So what's our time? Oh, we're getting close to the end here.
Before we go, someone in the comments says that Bonamito.
Yes, I got that. Actually, I have it.
Chevy already. South. Uh-huh. 23 grand. Look at that, Dom. It's not the blue.
It's okay.
They've got stock.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'll take whatever if they want to sell. But they say request sale. They have a retail price, and they say request sale price. I just know. And they have Capital One estimated financing.
These ones in Clearwater. This is Dimmitt Chevrolet in Clearwater.
Yeah, they have a $2,000 upcharge on their things, but they give you nitrogen in your tires and a flashing brake
light. Hey, Dimmitt, you know, come on, this is dumb. Dimmitt Chevrolet.
So that 26,000 turns into 33,000.
Oh, well, come on.
Well,
if anyone
just say like, hey, I don't want to pay for the nitrogen, take it off and I'll come today and write you a check.
I tried that. No.
Really?
Did you show up
there in person?
I mean, I didn't go in person. I'm talking to the guy on the phone.
You can't negotiate on the phone. You got to get in there. You got to slap them around. You got to stuff them in the back of the car and say, you're only coming out when you sell it to me for my price.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, they have a dealership just a few miles away from them. That's hopefully will, you know, send me something. But I do have that other one, the Bomarito. I already have that website pulled down. And
right.
I'll give
them
a call right after the podcast to see.
Let's get a bidding war going between these dealers. Come on, look, this is Dom's next ride. This is a famous car. It's a celebrity car, people. Let's take this seriously. Jeez. Let's get some discounts on the go. Come on.
I did have my first Firefly Rebellion show this week, and it was great. It was
look at this. Come on,
it's 2 hours.
Man, as well.
It was great.
Come on, dealers.
Just a couple of other things that we wanted to hit before we leave. The wait list has opened up for the Lightyear 2 solar EV. It's going to be under 40,000 in the US.
Yeah, it's and the Lightyear 1 on the road, first of all, should we?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's going. It's happening, right? It's being built. So there's a little bit of a teaser on Inside EV's website. They don't have a whole lot of information there yet. So I just wanted to mention that. Also, if you're not a big fan of the yoke steering wheel, apparently Tesla has a retrofit program. You can now order them with round steering wheels, which, wow. Imagine that, round steering wheel. Or you can pay, if you have the yoke and you don't like it. I don't know what you think, Kyle. You have the yoke in your Plaid, right?
Ew, it's dumber than dirt. I really don't like it.
So $700 gives you a round steering wheel. You going to go that way?
I've already put my name on the list.
Okay.
I was going to do an aftermarket upgrade solution where I already have the Model 3 steering wheel at my house that I was going to put on the car. But now that there's a Tesla option, first of all, that'll make a more interesting video because this is the option everyone's going to go with. Right. And it's fully approved through Tesla. So I'm first opportunity. My car's going in, getting the round wheel.
And the round wheels are great. I like the round wheels. Like you see in the picture, it's round. It's not flat on the bottom, is it? A little bit?
No. Thank God it's not flat. I hate flat bottom wheels.
Yeah.
And also, the only downside here is no stocks. The solution I was going to go with would have added stocks. Right. But now for sure, I'm just going full Tesla wheel. I think I have to wait eight or 12 weeks, something like that. I don't drive the car super often, so that's okay. And then once I have the round wheel, you won't be able to pull me out of this thing. I'm never getting out of the car. It's so great.
Right? I just think that Tesla steering wheel, I generally, that's the thing that you interact with the car the most. And, it's a kind of important thing. I never realized, for the longest time, you see like flat bottom steering wheels in cars and they look great. Not that fun to drive with. I think Bolt has one, actually, a bit of a flat bottom in it.
It's because of the racing pedigree, of course, of the Bolt.
Of course. please make them round. It's just, it just works. Anyway, anybody else want to bring up anything before we end?
That's genius, by the way. Tesla made the car worse, and then will charge you extra to make it as good as it would have been without the charge. That's just brilliant. Like, they're a great business model. I love them so much.
I'm almost wondering if it's like a demand kind of thing. They just want to like boost demand more. I don't know what the resistance demand is for this.
No, he was very anti giving people the option back in 2001.
Oh, yes, very anti.
Said, can we have a normal steering wheel? And he said, no. Like, he wants the yoke, but I mean, he's running Twitter, so someone else made that decision.
Maybe he didn't even know this was happening. I don't know. Who knows?
Never received more tags, more emails, more mentions than when this, I mean, literally the phone, I was just scrolling, just everyone letting me know about this. And, are you going to do it? And like, yes, I'm going to do it.
Right on. All right.
Kyle get his steering wheel before Dom gets a Bolt.
Yeah.
At this rate,
let's put up a poll.
It's only 12 weeks away, right?
I'll have that Bolt. I'm going to give Rachel down at the dealer a call right after this, actually, just to see what's going on.
Visit her.
I want to make sure that I'm on her show.
Go in person. They want to see that you're serious.
I mean, they're in Clearwater. I have to rent a car to drive down there.
Just Uber over there and say you're not leaving this dealership until you put me in the Bolt for the price that it says on the website. They got 50 of these things. They want to sell them.
Right. Well, they have 50 on the website. They don't actually have 50 on the ground. They're
tell them they'll have 49 on the website. It'll be easier.
Yeah. We'll see. I'll do a bunch of calling right after this. But I think that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, you can leave them on the Inside EVs forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. Thumbs up. Right. If you're watching this on YouTube, don't forget you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Logney at Tomolog. That's just two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And I'm at Dominic on post.news. Martin's brought it up here on if you're watching this on YouTube.
Look at that. That's what post.news is. There you go.
Yeah.
Wow, it looks that like looks that. Worse than Twitter. I'm sorry. But
it's still in beta. It's not even open. You can't even get on it unless you've signed up and they let you in. But in a couple months, it'll be much improved and better. It's because it's pluses and minuses, but
okay,
it's not so bad. And Mastodon is actually, I'm enjoying that too. But yeah, Twitter's just got lots of traffic going on there.
But Twitter's still king. I'm sorry. I know everyone left for political reasons or whatever, but Twitter is king for getting your message out.
Yeah, I don't really feel it was political reasons for me. It's a little bit deeper than that. But anyway.
Sure. But
we're going to stick to automotive. Don't get me going, man. I've been trying to keep my mouth shut for weeks now. Okay. So thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you again next week. Ciao.